welcome to the Feverbee podcast. My name is Katie Kobe, and I'm head of training here at Feverbee Limited. I train community managers in the art of community building using proven social science techniques. In the Feverbee podcast, I'll share tools and techniques that you can use in your daily community management efforts. Listen weekly to get new tips, industry news, and hear stories from guest practitioners to help you become the best community manager in the business. Make sure you subscribe for free updates and review our show notes to get all of the resources mentioned in the podcast today. Show notes are published weekly at communitygeek.com/podcast. Today, I'm excited to introduce you to Daniel Franck, Developer Relations Program Manager at Google. After creating several niche communities and having a developer and business background, he launched the first Google-related meetup-based community for developers and geeks back in 2007 in the Czech Republic. Later, Dan joined Google to assist in expanding the concept of Google-supported technology communities globally under the brands of Google Developer Groups, Google Business Groups, and Google Educator Groups. These communities today are represented by hundreds of chapters worldwide, ran by thousands of independent volunteer leaders organizing several hundred meetups every month for developer, entrepreneur, and educator communities. Daniel is currently leading a new Google initiative to further engage developer and entrepreneur-related communities all around the world. So Daniel, thank you so much for being here today. I'm so excited to have you on the show.
Thanks, Katie, and I'm very happy to be joining your podcast.
Oh, good, good, good. I always love it when people like to join the podcast. So I want to start the discussion today and really actually focus on some of the topics from your Sprint talk, which was all around developing these global communities. But if we could get started by having you provide us some context around the communities that you support, can you give us a little bit more insight into the developer relations and the business and educator programs?
Sure. So probably many of the people who listen to your podcast would know the online communities we do in Google, which is about like AdWords and product, where basically the interactions happens online. What we do in developer platform is the type of communities which is about meetups, about people getting together. And as Katie, you said, well, there is several types of these communities. So what I'm working with are the developer communities. And I will get to that. There are several flavors to that. As you mentioned, we also support educator communities where teachers and other pre-university educators get together. We also support entrepreneur and startup communities. The focus of my work revolves around supporting developers. And we in Developer Platform basically want to enable developers to build applications and businesses that bring technology to everyone. And many of my colleagues address this goal from many different angles. We in the communities, a communities team, focus at how do we help developers be great developers and have a great developer experience via meetup communities. Mm-hmm. And this is where the Google developer groups and other technical communities come into play, because we realized that when we support and enable people to get together face to face, the technical people, the developers, and we support them so that they can discuss technical topics, they can get their hands on coding, on developing cool new stuff, when they get together to share from one another about what works in certain technology, what does not, or even do networking so that they can maybe create a startup or do an application together. That's a really powerful way to engage the developer community. And we have been doing this informally since 2007 and in a more sort of formal way in the past several years. And as you said in the introduction, it's growing really fast and really big. So the GDGs, the Google Developer Groups, which is the largest community project we support, we don't really own it or manage it. We support it as a prime partner. So I was checking the calendar yesterday, and we seem to have 600 chapters in about 100 countries.
Okay.
And they are doing about 3,000 events in the past 6 months. So by the events, so it's not like an online community. The platform, it's pretty much the ground and the venue where about 20 or 30 or 40 people get together. They may listen to an expert. They may share experience. They may do a little bit of coding, and then they go home again. So we have had about 3,000 events in the past 6 months around these topics.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for giving us some background into the developer relations program. I know a little bit about the developer relations program in the US, but it very much is something that varies. And, you know, having essentially on track to have something like almost 6,000 meetups a year, 3,000 in the last 6 months. And that's just really, really incredible work that's done by your team. So great job for that.
Thanks. And also, I should also say that it's not the relationship we are having with the communities is not that we would be sort of responsible for these events,
right,
or that we would be running these events. What we do, and that's the name of our whole program, developer platform, we want to create a platform on which people come and have everything they need to, yeah, maybe do 3,000 events in the past 6 months.
Very cool. Well, in your talk at Sprint, I want to dive into a little bit deeper. You brought up the concept of a community adaptive system.
Yes.
So what exactly does that look like?
Yes, I know it sounded horribly scientific and sort of off the ground, but
we like the science.
Yeah, so I had the need sort of to fly a little bit above the ground and to look at what we are doing from 10,000 feet. Because the 6,000 events, it obviously didn't happen overnight. And at some point, we started truly growing, seeing the very rapid growth of the communities. And as the communities grew, our sort of the amount of support we do cannot sort of match this at the same pace. So I was looking at those things. How do we keep supporting the communities? And what is really the essence of how our communities work? And one of the answers is that we help the communities to be engaged and active via the organizer community. So we are actually looking at two types of communities. One is the very broad community of developers who come to the events and experience the interactions and engagement. But then we have a small subset of several thousand organizers around the world who actually organize these events and help the community to be engaged. So our way to grow the overall community is via supporting the organizer community. But still, the organizer community, it's really large. And there is no way and actually no wish or desire to manage this community so that we would have a like a boss and who would be setting up a strategy for the next year. And now everybody's doing hackathons and then everybody's doing meetup events. So it's happening very much organically. So I was looking at some of the models that work in a similar way and allow the system to grow sort of organically and bottom up in a sustainable way. And well, the answer is found in the nature. If you look at things like the flocks of birds or schools of fish or ants building an ant nest, these are lots of small, you know, tiny organisms who do that do some incredible achievements together, like the ants building the ant nest or termite nest. And there is really no boss or no org chart or no structure organizing them. And the organisms, they are not behaving in some very complicated way. They are rather primitive organisms. So it turns out that it's been described pretty well under the title of complex adaptive systems, which are systems seen not in biology, but also in mathematics or social sciences, where you have lots and lots of independent actors, they call them actors or agents, we might just say people or organizers, who have some very basic rule behaviors. Like, for example, the birds in the flock of birds, they have just basic rules which say, don't move away than half a meter from the next bird. If you see a danger, move away no matter what other birds are doing, and always follow the other birds, you know, stuff like that. And when they have basic rules like this, together they create something which is very much exceeding their individual capabilities. So the complex adaptive systems say basically that when you put together a large amount of actors and create some basic conditions, they can create an emergent action, emergent meaning happening from bottom up, which nobody orders them to do. It sort of happens magically, but the organism is sustainable, it's pretty stable, and it's growing. And when you look at these properties and elements of complex adaptive systems, and when you look at the communities, and particularly at our need to keep growing the organizer community, I found it almost identical. I don't want to say that the GDG organizers or the community organizers are like ants or termites, but they are independent actors who don't have a boss, who don't have an org chart, who do pretty much what they want to do. And under some basic conditions, they create incredible global action resulting in these 3,000 events a month or in some large conferences, for example, in Peru or in Turkey, where the community organizes conference for 2,000 people or 3,000 people. And it's all sort of this combined magic of the adaptive systems. So the word community adaptive systems, I throw it in mostly like a sort of fun word to relate to the complex adaptive systems. I'm sure the authors of the complex adaptive systems would have a few question marks about it. But it's basically saying that we can grow communities using the principles of the complex adaptive systems, which luckily have been already described very well by various authors.
And I think that that is important to have a model, essentially, that you can look after, because that model is what tells you where you need to go next. I mean, it's a big part of the reason why in a lot of the work that we do, we refer back to the academic material, because, you know, why reinvent the wheel if people are already doing these things, if these behaviors that we want to drive, if these, you know, actions and events, if all this stuff is already happening in nature, why try and refigure it out on your own? But rather, when you can base things off of a model, specifically one that's scientifically proven, that just allows you to, you know, get a step ahead, so to speak, in the process. Okay. Well, thank you so much for providing a little bit more clarity into that. And I noticed when I was like looking through your slides from Sprint, which I'll link to those, there's sort of three sections related to this system. There's like the distributed management, the emergent action, and then the culture piece. So I kind of want to talk about each three pieces, if that's all right. But let's focus real quickly on the distributed management section of the system, which focuses mostly on the people and the roles that they play. So how do you go about then getting the right people for these particular communities and you know, getting them started and obviously factoring the roles? What all what does that look like for you?
Yeah. So these three things you mentioned, I call them properties of the sort of adaptive system. And there is actually more than just these three, but I found these three to be very important for growing a sustained organic communities like what we are doing. The one that you mentioned, the distributed management, it basically refers to the fact that when you want to build a community organization, you have to build it as a non-organization, basically, meaning that it's completely flat, or let's say sort of multidimensional, meaning that all various people in the system sort of relate to one another in a non-hierarchical way, so to say. So there is no boss, there is no management, nobody telling people what to do. You can think of it if you had traveled to Southeast Asia or the island of Sicily, and you experience the traffic over there. And sometimes I'm showing the videos from intersections in Vietnam or other Southeast Asian countries. Basically, there are no traffic rules, no policemen. It seems completely crazy, like there are no traffic lanes. And there are all kinds of, you know, vehicles and people on bikes and people walking and people with, you know, rickshaws and tuk-tuks. But when you look at it, there is absolutely no accident. There is absolutely no problem.
I've always wondered about that.
Exactly. Somehow seem to manage that. And sometimes these crazy trick patterns are used as an illustration for this distributed management. So even though there is no policeman, and even though there are even no sort of hard-coded traffic rules, the people follow just very basic behaviors, which probably are something like don't go faster than 40 kilometers an hour because then you will be becoming dangerous. Second, if you see somebody coming closer to you than half a meter, then honk. And anybody who was in India knows that people are honking all the time. And The third rule, be don't worry about where you go as long as you go in the direction where everybody around you is going. And when you give people these simple behaviors and pretty much everybody is doing them, then basically the system does not even need a management. What you need is a management of the roadworks, for example. So there needs to be some hierarchical structure which probably builds the roads. And so this is the type of support we provide to the GDGs. We don't actually manage people's behavior. We don't tell them what to do, like type of action, what type of event they should do. We just tell them, if you want to join our communities, here are some of the basic behaviors that everybody is expecting you to do. And not us in Google, but everybody in the community. And these basic behaviors are things like organize at least one event every 3 months, do it for developers, or do it about a non-developer topic for developers, or do it about a developer topic for developers. And the third sort of rule is communicate with the rest of the organizers. And we tell them the rest is completely up to you guys and girls. Whatever you want to do, which fits these basic behaviors, fine, do it. But at the same time, on the infrastructure side, we make sure that the organizers have a discussion platform, for example, where they can share experience. Sometimes we organize summits for them, which is quite hard to do it on a volunteer basis. We may take them to the Google I/O, for example, some of them to experience, etc. But this is taking care of the platform, not of sort of the organization itself. And I had seen cases, especially in sort of branded communities or corporate supported communities, where the corporation sort of imposes the corporate hierarchy over the community. And you sort of try to control the community.
It doesn't really work like that.
Pardon?
Is that it doesn't really work like that.
Exactly. Yeah. Because one of the things is people are volunteers, mm-hmm. and they don't expect that somebody will be sort of bossing over them.
Right.
And also you would not be doing a service to your project, because if you would be sort of designing any activity for the community, then you would limit the creativity coming from the community. And one of the huge advantages of these communities is that they are very quickly reacting to what's happening in the ecosystem, to what's happening around the available technology. And if we would have to wait for some committee to design some action around Android TV, for example, then it would take so much time and it would be very artificial. So just like, you know, the ants who are seeing something interesting in the woods and start gathering around it, in the same way the communities behave. Like if there is an interesting stimulus, an interesting thing to do, they might start sort of group around it and create this emergent action. But nobody tells them to do that. Right. And nobody manages this process.
Well, and I think one piece that I noticed about rules and thinking about the system and the rules that you're providing and the rules that you mentioned, you know, in the traffic circle in Southeast Asia, is that the rules are really quite simple.
Exactly.
They're more like guidelines, so to speak. Yes. Mm-hmm. And they're really just, they're in place to provide a little bit of structure, but like you say, you can't control that whole experience. And where I think that some organizations fall into a bit of a misstep is when they want to try and set rules for every single thing, and
yeah.
they want to try to have a plan for, you know, every element and every aspect of the community in place. And
exactly.
you know, you see all these you know, documentation and policies and that sort of thing in
yeah.
place, but really it's like, well, what would happen if you just took a step back and let your community be the creative piece that it is?
Yeah, and I kind of understand why the organizations do that, because, you know, we as community managers, we do know that communities work like that, and this is their power. But the corporate sponsors, the internal sponsors, they are not from our field, and they may not necessarily have the same understanding. And I had experienced it in other organizations when you come to the internal sponsors and tell them, you know what, we have to keep the community happening organically. Mm-hmm. We cannot tell them what they should do, you know, let, you know, have them behave by the basic rules. You know, then the internal sponsors tend to freak out,
right.
because this is completely against how we work in organizations, where you set up a plan and you go to follow the plan. So the common question is, so give me the community plan for the next year. And we always have to tell them, well, Yeah, the plan is that we'll do events.
Like it'll be
so
there.
So tell us, how many events for how many people? What do you do in Q1, Q2? This is not happening in Google, but I'd seen it in other organizations. And this is sort of the clash of the hierarchy versus mm-hmm. the sort of organic way. And in a way, what we have to do, we have to be like facilitators, like peacemakers, because I'd also seen communities where the community managers would be really fighting back, you know, this type of thinking. And this is also not the way to do, because it's quite understandable that people who support an external initiative, should it be a community or something else, they want to see why they are doing this, and they want to see some reasoning why their support translates into something beneficial for the organization. Mm-hmm. And so at the same time, we have to be able to explain to the internal sponsors how the organic community work benefits the organization while sort of maintaining some of the core characteristics of our communities, and explaining to the internal sponsors that these characteristics, yes, may sound crazy from the internal sort of way that corporations work. And at the same time, if we maintain them, we actually help the community do the work that they do and achieves the benefits that the organizations may be interested in.
Interesting. Well, so then along that path of just having to, you know, provide that balance and sort of let mm-hmm. them do, and you can't totally plan too much, what does that look like then when you get to the area where you need to be providing resources and support for the communities and, you know, increasing like the interactions? Because obviously mm-hmm. you get value yeah. by making sure that there's a number yeah. of events that are happening. Exactly. So how does all that work together?
Exactly. So basically any community, online or offline, small or big, is all based on interactions. If people don't interact, then there is no community, basically. Right. So lots of the support that we provide is to helping the interactions to be sort of more in quantity, but also better in quality. And so for the interactions, what make sure that the national communication board for the organizers is working, which doesn't mean that people are just signed up, but it means that they are interacting on the board, that they share experiences, even the fails, the successes, that they do it online and that they do it face-to-face. We bring them together a lot. We communicate with them a lot. We have people on the ground in most of the regions and countries mm-hmm. who talk pretty much one-on-one with some of the key organizers. And as I said, our way to grow the channel community is to grow the organizer community and then, you know, empower them. So we talk mostly to the organizers, who are a large community of its own, and make sure that the interactions happen. We help them with community management training. And part of that is showing what kind of events you can do for the community. And we always put lots of emphasis on the events which are interaction-based. So you may do an event where people come and just listen to an expert, but we say this is not really a community event, because the real power lies in the crowd that comes to listen to the expert. So what do we do so that when people come to the event, listen to an expert, so that they also share their experience, that they are able to find out who is on the event, to create connections, to stay in touch, maybe do something together. So all it revolves around interactions. And also, even though the complex adaptive systems sort of shows this as a sort of kind of magical thing, mm-hmm. it's for us, it's very natural that these systems only work where you have interactions, and these interactions have to happen in a network. To provide the network means that we have to network the organizers together. So we might provide them with a national discussion forum, the summits, etc., these things I've already described.
And then in terms of, I guess, this final piece of the system related to culture specifically, I mean, we've briefly talked on network. But also, I mean, the learning piece of it as well, and making sure that you can always be adaptable, and making sure that you can really learn from your community just as much as, you know, they're learning from each other, so to speak. So what does that look like in the work that you do specifically?
So you touched two things. One is the role of culture, and the other one is the role of change. So I'm glad we are still talking about the culture, because it's super important. So you may attract people who want to do the behaviors which are described by the few simpler rules. So in our case, this is organize an event, do it for developers, or do it on developer topic, and interact with the rest of the organizers. Let's say these are the three basic behaviors that everybody is expecting. But this is not enough. You have to have people who are sort of culturally aligned with the rest of the community, and in our case, the organizer community. And if you did not have that, then the execution of these three behaviors would be really different. Even like if you look back at nature, the ants and the bees might have the same three behavior rules, for example, but together they would not be able to work together because they sort of execute them differently.
Right.
So when we look at the communities, you want to make sure that the people are, what the complex adaptive system theory calls, that are self-relatable or self-similar. So the organisms, the basic actors, the basic people, they have to be similar. So in our case, we also have other set of actions and support we do, so that we make sure that whoever becomes the organizer is sort of culturally fit the rest of the group. And by culture, meaning that they share the same values, norms, and behaviors. Mm-hmm. I had seen a good example of that recently in one of our events I had seen, or the GDG events I had seen in Paris, in France. There was maybe like 30 or 40 developers listening to a very technical topic. And one of the developers came to me and said, "Hey, we are so happy you guys are supporting us to do that because I love it here." And I asked him, so what do you love? And interestingly, he didn't say the topic or the expert. He says just, "Look around, you know, these people." So I looked around and I saw a room of 30 or 40 developers, you know, very technical people. And the person says, "These are normal people. This is not like what you see on the street. These are normal people. I'm home here."
Oh, that's so heartwarming.
Exactly. I love that. And,
oh, that's fantastic.
You know, if you looked around, I'm sure that the people from the street would not really call this room full of normal people.
Right.
But, you know, for our community, the moment that you start feeling at home, meaning that you are with people who share your values, you don't have to explain everything, you don't have to explain your behaviors, you don't have to explain why it's so cool to code until 6 a.m. in the morning. So this is the similar culture, the same culture. So we really make sure that our organizer group sort of rotates around these similar values. And when they do, they attract the crowd of the people like the guy I met in Paris. And at the same time, the second topic is change, you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
So there could be a danger that the community would be so tightly sort of like family feeling that they would not actually let anybody in, because it's like having a family dinner and somebody brings somebody completely new to the family table and says, "Hey, I met this great person and they will be dining with us from now on." So sometimes when there is such a strong feeling of family, that doesn't work. So we also do things which support the evolution of the community, the change. And you don't have to do much, actually. What you have to do is to allow sort of actions and behaviors which nobody thought of, which nobody planned. And this is coming back to our beginning of the talk. So this is in our very DNA. So the only thing we have to make sure is that if somebody comes with some new crazy idea about something to do, as long as it fits the basic behaviors and as long as it fits the culture or the community, nobody is saying, "Let's not do it."
Mm-hmm.
And we had seen some crazy examples. Like my favorite is here from the Czech Republic. You know, we are a beer country. Everybody drinks beer. I think we have the highest beer consumption per capita in the world. So the community started doing an event called G Beer. I suppose G stands for Google, but nobody explained that. And what happens is that the developers just get together in a bar, in a pub, and have a couple of beers and have fun together. And one group started doing that, and exactly as the emergent behavior happens, they communicated over the network we support with other organizers and told them, hey, listen, we did this GBR and it was so much fun and so cool. And organizers listened and say, so what do you guys need to do to organize the GBR? And the organizers said, well, almost nothing. You have to do just ABC and that's it. So the other organizers started doing it. And we had almost like a wave of these GBR events happening around the country. Why this is still, you know, within the culture? Because it's developers getting together. It's an event, face-to-face event. So again, it's fitting our culture and the basic behaviors. And also when they get together, well, what do they talk about? It's not necessarily politics or TV series. They very often talk the things which is dear to them, which is their passion. And passion, you know, in any community is a key element. So they talk about development stuff. And this is exactly what community is about. Interactions around the topic which everybody is passionate about. So even though nobody envisioned these GBRs, they happened automatically, they emerged. Mm-hmm. And they are great. People love it. Organizers love it. Attendees love it. And also they do some, I'm not calling work, but they do stuff which helps them be better developers. And that's how it works.
That's so interesting. And that's such a, I mean, it's a really special story that you shared. So thank you for that. And it's just, I mean, it's so characteristic of this entire model that you've really just described and how, you know, you're not putting too many constructs in place. You're exactly. still giving people the room and the space to be yep. who they are, to be able to make the community a place where they do feel at home. And mm-hmm. that's just so crucial. I think there's so much of community building out there that's actually just over-engineered. Like we don't let, exactly. we don't want to let our community members like be who they are. Instead, you know, we want them to do very specific things and behave in very, very specific ways. And I understand there are ways you can influence those behaviors, but it's just, I always think that it's really fantastic to see things that, you know, they just work and they just seem so effortless, and they're not effortless by any means, but there's just a few key constructs in place. And that just seems to make everyone work together
exactly
in a better way.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much for going into all the detail about all of that. I missed your talk at Sprint, so I really wanted to talk to you about this particular subject. Before we close out for the day, do you have any last sort of pieces of advice maybe for community managers out there who are working on similar programs, or perhaps they want to launch similar programs related to meetups?
Yeah, one of the advice, it's something not new and you have heard it many times, so let me just reiterate that. And it says, don't rush it. You cannot rush a development of an online community or a meetup community. And because rushing means that you are proactively telling people what to do, basically. It's one of the elements of rushing. So it takes time. It may take a couple of years until you see a meetup community stable enough. And the second biggest goal is to be really friendly to people who don't understand at all what we do, because they are coming from different sort of mindsets. Mm-hmm. And I found out that the more we are friendly in the sense of being able to explain the impact that the communities do in the language of the traditional hierarchical company, the better we are able to communicate the benefits of their support to us. So my second advice is, let's not be too much stuck in our mindsets of community managers, and sort of let's outreach to the, I would call, old world of hierarchies, and let's adopt their language to tell them how great the communities are in their language, not in ours.
Well, I think that's some very critical pieces of advice there to remember, especially, I mean, the not rushing part for one, but then also, you know, reminding ourselves it's very easy for us to get stuck into our own culture.
Exactly.
That's what I really understood you say. And so making sure that we can adapt and be a little bit more open-minded is always a great reminder.
Exactly.
Perfect. Well, Daniel, that brings us to the end of our time today, but thank you so much for all of this information. It was really, really interesting. I'm going to post the link to your slides from Sprint in the show notes so people mm-hmm. can check them out and sure. have a much closer look at what some of these community adaptive systems look like. For everyone out there who's listening, show notes again will be published at communitygeek.com/podcast. And also you can go onto iTunes or Stitcher to review the show and let us know how you're doing. And we'll definitely look forward to seeing you guys next week. Thank you.